And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Here on Declare Your Independence, I'm here in Ernest Hancock, Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA, beautiful studios of Freedom of the Nest, phoenixphoenix.com, Karen Katowski. We weren't done last week, not near done, had a lot to talk about. We just got off with Gerald Celente, and he got us going. He had like a secret project. I can't tell you about it, but you know it's coming, and it's going to be about peace and freedom and stuff. So we're going to be sharing as that goes further along, help each other out and see what's up. But I tell you, one of the other future trender, we get to know what the hell is going on, is Karen Katowski. Definitely, definitely Karen. So what I want to do is get right to where we left off last week. I said we weren't done. And we had, we're talking about Trump and some of his stuff, but we didn't get into the Middle East or North Africa, Europe, the European Union, North Korea, Russia, China, South China Sea, on and on and on. By the way, we're going to get biggest military ever to be wiped out by hypersonic missiles from Russia and China. But anyway, so this is what we're going to be talking about. Karen, where do you want to start off? Lieutenant Colonel, retired United States Air Force from the Pentagon. She's also been a Ron Paul revolutionary activist of freedom and such. Writes a lot on LouRockwell.com whenever she's got a hankering, and she's living out on the farm, and she's a professor. Are you still teaching?
Yeah, I teach online, couple different schools. Yep, so I'm staying busy, and one of the classes I get to teach is government, so that's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's pick it up. I was really excited about, you know, getting your perspective beginning of the year and a bunch of this other stuff. Which one do you want? That's a long list, man. We whip right through them, but you know, tell me which one you want to talk about first.
Oh my gosh, I don't know. We could pick one at random, I guess. You know, I like to look at Trump as like a scientific project. You know, to see what he's doing, what he's trying to do, and read into it, because you know, he ran, as we all remember. I mean, he ran and he distinguished himself from his opponent. And most of the Republicans, by kind of saying, you know, I want the non-interventionist foreign policy, put our resources in the country, our country, first and foremost. That's what he ran on, and that was
right after we get a big giant Navy.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, what he's doing is an indication of, you know, we talk about the deep state or whatever, but what he's doing is an indication of the extreme power of the military-industrial state. You know, it is how we get governed in this country. We get governed by money, taking borrowed money and taxed money, and then having that money put into the hands of big corporations, and then through them, employment figures and numbers in the various districts that make up Congress. I mean, it's that iron triangle kind of thing. So Trump talks like people want to hear, or he did, at least over half of them. And had Trump not been a Republican, his non-intervention foreign policy would have gained him many Democratic votes as well, because that's something that a good part of the Democratic Party likes to march about and talk about, except when they're in control, then they don't. But, you know, had he not been a Republican, he would have gained even more popular votes on his proposed foreign policy, America First type of approach. But he has been, regardless of how popular that is, he's been... you know, not co-opted. He's been basically led, forced, accommodated or whatever, or ignored even. It's possible that he's being ignored. But I would say he's being co-opted, as they do most of the presidents. You know, they sit down, have a little chat with them, and they say, oh, no, we're not doing that. We're doing this. And what this is what we've been doing since even before World War II,
If we got the best, you know, what do I want to say, the most optimistic view of what's going on, I'm thinking that he's negotiating. He's all about negotiation. All right, fine. You want to have – how many aircraft carriers do you get to have for me to get the EPA, not the something? You know, how do
it could be, yes.
You know, he's negotiating.
It could be that he's up for that, that he's actually taking them on, even though it doesn't look like it from our perspective, you know, because we want to see that military, you know, shrunk. I mean, we want to see that. My own son, who doesn't pay attention to politics all that much, was saying he didn't understand why it's a $700 billion military budget. I said, because a lot of people want that money.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, how hard is it? Because they can't.
We don't need that. It's clear to him that we don't need that kind of a military. I think the trend lines for the future, the millennials, the future people that are going to be voting, and certainly those paying taxes now, they don't want to support this big military. The trend lines, I'm going to go back and listen to the Gerald Celente interview because he's so brilliant, and this is perfect time of year. He's so good on his predictions and everything. But, you know, the trend lines for popularity, taxpayer popularity, American popularity, for a massive military such as we've been seeing, and certainly that Trump has funded or the Congress is ready to fund and is funding, that's not popular. That is passé. That is going away, and I think we're seeing the end times for that massive military.
They're going to have to scare the crap out of us and everybody know why they need us, you know, kind of thing.
That's right, and the thing is, we're too cynical. I mean, we've been through so much, multiple generations since the 60s, and really you can reach back to Vietnam times. I mean, the Vietnam War really brought on massive government cynicism, which stayed with a lot of people. Not all of them. Not all those people maintained their government cynicism. You know, a lot of socialists came out of that era, too. But, you know, this cynicism of government, this disbelief of government, and I think in some ways electing, and I've called Donald Trump a clown before, and I think, you know, you can take that positively or negatively, but the election of Donald Trump for many people feeds even more cynicism about what the government is doing. Okay, and what it wants to do.
You know, I want to get your comment on that. This is what Gerald's big deal was. He sees the future. He's all enamored with blockchain. Like everybody and her grandma, they mm-hmm. think it's the greatest, wonderful, you know, whatever it can do good things. And he's like, you know, it could have direct democracy. I mean, people can have their votes actually count, you know. And it'd
oh,
be,
sure, yeah.
You know, and I'm going, oh, yeah, government get right on that, you know. But the so he's of the opinion, and it's a lot from his generation. I get this. You know, it's people, mm-hmm. I'm 56, so I'm not a kid, but, you know, I'm not as nostalgic about the 50s as other people are. So you know, you get to the 50s and 60s, and they're like, ooh, and it's G. Edward Griffin and Gerald Celente and, you know, well, John Taylor Gatto, not so much. He kind of knows better. But, you know, I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, Ron Paul and Lou and so on. They're in this idea that the people will rise up again and create a third party, because Gerald's talking about a third party, that the trending is going towards the millennials. They don't see the parties representing them. They want to have one. So he is really focusing on, you know, bringing it. He thinks the future is a democratic thing, that there's going to be people, there's a movement that's going to take America back, and he wants to help direct that or encourage that. But I go, is this wishful thinking, or is this trend research? And he, nope, trending, damn it. So what do you think is going to happen?
Well, the solution is decentralization, and anything, let's just consider the population of this country, and let's call it 320 million people, stretched over four time zones, a massive economic machine of a country, and to think that you are going to be ruled democratically in that size is really, it's illogical and it's impossible. So the solution is decentralization.
Well, he's down to the individual. You know, he's down to the local. He's always, Gerald's always been quality, local, local, local.
That's all good, but you cannot have a United States of America empire.
History is full of flowery documents claiming to limit the power of the crown, but these poetic social contracts have been impotent to prevent the predation. Limited government is a lie they use to keep us submissive. The crown cannot be trusted to abide by its founding charters, nor its treaties, nor even its own rules. The essence of the crown is centralized violence, and I've had enough. That's why I raised my black banner. I am no revolutionary. My aim is not to reset the cycle of violence, but to break it. My aim is an evolved society, invisible to the crown. Not a new hierarchy, but decentralized networks with no central figure for the crown to target. If you want your servile life, keep it. But we will not submit to the crown's agenda. And when you are ready to stop being its beast of burden, ready for adventure and opportunity, join us at piratswithoutborders.com.
Yeah, Glenn Jacobs is running for mayor of Knoxville County. They got some kind of county mayor thing, you know. You know, so he's really going at it, you know, as a Republican there. I should get back with him before the holidays. I was talking to him. And so, yeah, you know, that'd be interesting to follow, see what's going on there. He's going real campaign, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds good. I mean, local's where it's at. I agree with Gerald on that, local and individual. But you have to give up your concept of an American empire.
Right. And see, that's one thing. They still get this nostalgic America thing.
Right. And they think like 1950s were real. 1950s
right.
You think about when the Depression actually broke and changed. It was after World War II ended. I mean, we were under, allocations and tickets for food, you know.
Austerity.
All through World War II. It wasn't a glorious time of great growth, and that's not what broke the Depression. It was this influx of money that had been rediversion, I should say, from war to other stuff. And to some extent, you know, the war itself is a government creation. The flow of money and resources post-war, in effect, is also a response to government intervention. So this is artificial in many ways. So that was an artificial economic environment in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you know, it's coming down to things that I would think that, I don't know if Gerald misses this stuff or it's a generational thing or what. There's going to be a lot of these young guys that are now gazillionaires, you know, on crypto or different things, but it's not just that. It's a philosophy. That's why we do the pirate thing, is decentralization of everything, even desktop manufacturing. I got desktop CNC, my ghost gunner thing. I got a desktop 3D printer that I'm blah, blah, blah. I got desktop, you know, I mean, you can... And my grandkids were going over learning how to do all kinds of crap. And I can see their generation as well. Of course I did it myself because I can. I got a replicator.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we have the tools to do what we need to do in the future to make it the kind of thing. But the fantasy of a great state, a great nation, the fantasy of national patriotism that includes, hundreds of millions of people, wrong. That's not sustainable. That is a facade, and it's going to fade away, and it's going to fall away, which it already is. I mean, blockchain is breaking borders and breaking national controls over banking.
All right, here
you know,
we go.
I mean, it's
coming
allowing
back.
People
What's
to...
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. 2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Wow! 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 I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
So good! So good! I got Kakadowski on the line!
I feel nice.
Yeah, we're going to look at that. Positive aspects of the America. Well, you know what? I say America. I can't even say it without saying, you know, my grandkid, you know, one of my grandsons, man, he's everybody's got their own Marvel character. You know, he's like Captain America. And I go, America. He always goes, America. America. I can't, you know, America, that was kind of like, it was an ideology, it was a promise that's kind of gone. You know, and it'll resurrect itself. And America used to mean something. And it's going to go down to what I thought it meant. The proper role of government is the defense of individual rights. Individual. My minority. I'm for the smallest minority. The individual. And there's a lot of people that, you know, they're counting on, I don't know, something else. But it's going to get down to that, and technology is supporting that. And I think that's what Karen's trying to share with us. Continue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the technology is allowing us to be individuals who act with other individuals and, you know, can reach across state line. We basically, states and governments are becoming increasingly irrelevant. And I think what we see a lot of, in terms of the actions of various states, is a recognition and a fear that they are indeed becoming irrelevant. And that goes to most of the states. I mean, you look at the EU and some of the European countries and the things they've had to do and the backtracking they've done and, you know, the troubles that they face trying to maintain control of their structures and not just that, but the support of the people to pay for all those structures. Same within this country. I mean, you know, the military-industrial complex, a big chunk of the resource, very worried about their legitimacy, their legitimate claim to those resources. They see the change coming. They're working hard to justify their existence. And you know, you could say, well, that's just a small part of what the government spends. You know, they pay interest on the debt. That's a huge part. Well, guess what the banks are doing? You think the banks don't sense their coming irrelevance? You know, as these controllers of transactions and commerce, they're not. They're not with blockchain, not with all of the competition that's out there. And then you say, well, what about all the entitlement programs? That's the bulk of government promise, and that's the bulk of spending is the entitlement programs. And that includes Social Security. It's certainly an entitlement. It's not a we didn't pay in. We paid in, but what we paid in is long gone. I mean, it is a pyramid scheme of of the worst kind. And they go, well, we're not worried because people want Social Security. Well, yeah, they do now. The people who paid for it and aren't getting anything will reject it so quick the government's head will spin. So all that's coming. And the government people, the bureaucrats, the planners, the government visionary, the state-loving visionaries, you know, whoever they are and wherever they are, they know this is coming. And they're preparing. They're preparing psychologically. They're preparing you know, their storylines, their sales pitches, their control mechanisms. I mean, you know, there's a reason Russia, China, the United States is going for, facial recognition databases linked to DNA databases, linked to, you know, transactional database, everything that you have. There's a reason governments are trying to track us and trying to document us and how we do. They're trying to predict and control our behavior, certainly predict it so that they can react to it in a way that preserves government. But all of it will be to naught because the technologies put power in the hands of the individuals, just like you said.
Well, you know, a lot of times these technologies are, you know, they're cool, and they can, and of course they get weaponized. You know,
they get weaponized when weapons are needed, and the only mass weapons are only needed by large concentrations of power, such as states.
You know, what I did is I wrote an article. I should pull it up here, but I wrote an article. I don't write as much as I'd like to. I mean, I get to express myself on the show, but it's good to be able to just, you know, kind of condense it down into an article. But I did take the time on New Year's Day to write an article that was our cups runneth over. I mean, an optimistic view of 18 and what's going to happen. Now, of course, there's going to be all kinds of negative news, and they're going to try and divert and why we need them and all that kind of crap. But I can see that, and the word picture that I used, I go, it's hard for me to argue whether the cup is, the glass is half full or half empty when it's sitting at the bottom of the ocean of opportunity. I mean, you know, it's, are you kidding me? You know, I mean, this is, so all these technologies that give them the ability, those won't leave me alone. Who are they, Ernie? The ones who won't leave me alone. I mean, get in line. It could be my neighbor. It could be a politician, some cop, some this. I mean, it's whoever won't leave me alone. That's all I need to know. So it clears the mind fog, and they take these technologies to, and we're going to take another half a percent. Isn't that much? I mean, you know, and then they keep funding stuff and all these double dipping municipal employees of how they got in the retirement, so they make more than when they were working, and now they're retired at 49, 52 or something, and they're ripping me off. So I'm just going, this is not sustainable. So when it goes, what are we going to fall back on? Well, they are like another government program or something. What do we think is going to happen? I mean, is that why you're living out on the horse country? I mean, you know, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, physically,
well,
to most people.
I mean, you know, I think, you know, we can't know. And certainly the technology we have today is unparalleled. There's no real comparison historically. But we can look at a great many examples of where statist societies have collapsed. And we can predict some of the things that will happen. In the Soviet Union, that's probably our best bet, what happened to the Soviet Union. It spun off into independent countries, each of which struggled with what they needed to do, and many of which were corrupt.
And who wants to be tied with California? Which one wants to go with California?
That's right. Let them go.
Let them go.
Go. It's ludicrous that and because we have had a capitalist system of some sort. I wouldn't call it. It's not free market, but we have been a wealthy and productive engine of the planet for many years. We're not that now, but we had been. So we end up with states who have economies far larger than over half or even three quarters of the countries out there. Whole states that are subsidiary to Washington, that shouldn't be. There's no reason for that. No reason at all for that. We can produce in smaller units of smaller organizational units of humans can be quite viable.
Yeah, we're diverse. Every state. I mean, think of what's a small state that doesn't have what? I mean, you'd think something like, well, maybe the large land map be like North Dakota, but then mm-hmm. they got oil, so that doesn't count.
That's right.
So
they got shale up there.
So then you're thinking, yeah. What's another state there? Wyoming. Well, they got a lot of land and not that many people.
Let's just take Wyoming because it has a great number of parks. I mean, like Utah and some of these other places. But if Wyoming was its own country, they could preserve far better than the federal government is able to preserve their beautiful land. You know, what we have in federal parks. They would be national parks in the country of Wyoming. They could wonderfully take care of those and profit from them.
Hell, and mine them. You know, and this part right here, we turn that into a mine, and it's on the other side of the ridge, and don't worry about it, and it funds all the other stuff, and we're good.
That's right. The decentralization will be very positive.
Yeah, I see. I can't imagine the United States continuing with this debt the way it is, especially as Gerald Celente was a big deal on. Here comes China. We'll get to that next with Perry.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, see, that's what I want to do when we come back. We'll get into, you know, our international competition of, you know,
you
want to know what's going to happen or what can be, you just get to imagination of a freaking 12-year-old. I mean, you go to fifth graders and you say, okay, how would you do this? What would be, and they come out with things like, yeah, build all the aircraft carriers you want. You just got hypersonic Chinese missiles and problem solved. So I'm like, I don't understand what they're thinking. They're not thinking.
That's right. They're surviving. They are in a panic mode. and bureaucrats, you know, aren't imaginative. The only imagination that's come out of government is when they set up these special groups and they say no holds barred, be imaginative. The organizations themselves are very unimaginative. That's one of the. It's a part of bureaucracy. It's the nature of bureaucracy. Imagination and new ideas and varying from the norm are punished in all bureaucracies. So that's why you have to. That's why they die. They mature and they wither and then they die.
Well, this, see, to me, you know, I look at, you know, like, other things. You know, they go, Ernie, how'd you know this, and how'd you know that, and how'd you know? And I'm like, how did you not know? What were you looking at, you know? And it's not real until, you know, those say it. Like this cryptocurrency thing. The mm-hmm. second everybody, it's Bitcoin is right when it's not, you know? And it's, I can see what's happened. You know, I was talking to Gerald about it. Excuse me. There is a takeover inside Bitcoin from the banks. That's what's going on. They're inside. I mean, this is not like a big secret, you know. And, mm-hmm. oh, Donna, send her that, you know, decentralized thought, you know, thing. Donna's going to send you a video. I don't know if I sent it to you last week. I'm really pimping this thing.
I don't think so.
What it is a young, like, 23-year-old kid from Arkansas. I had him on, and I've been screaming this forever. So, of course, people started sending this to me. And what it is they have this new Lightning Network that's going to make Bitcoin cheaper to use and so on. They made it expensive. They keep a limited number of transactions, so it gets really, it's $30 to send a dollar transaction now. I mean, seriously.
Wow.
So It's, I mean, that's the average. That may be $50 to set in if you got a bunch of small ones combined. I mean, it's just, it's unusable. So that's why these other cryptos are shooting up and you got Bitcoin Cash and so on. But as soon as they get Bitcoin, it's all the rage and the Google trending of the search terms of whatever. Then here comes the hedge funds and everybody and their grandma wants it because it's going to become GoldmanSucks.gov coin. And they are going to be able to program it to be what they want. Well, they already started. And what happens is, to make it cheaper, it has a separate offline or parallel infrastructure called Lightning, which is the banking system. It's all KYC and, you know, money laundering and anti-this and terror and all that. And it's going to track you down to everybody and here's my DNA scan. So, and they're open about it. And the thing, well, it's a store of value. You need, but the only value, reason it had a store of value is because it was useful as a currency. It's not like I can make a watch out of it or something. So I'm going, you know, what's the features? This is such a mania, and it's prompted, and it's like AI wrote it so they could screw us later and beg for our cashless society of they get to turn off the switch. And I'm going, are you guys stupid? This is
Why is Bitcoin accommodating the government changes like this? Why are they doing
that? Well, many aren't. And that's what Bitcoin Cash is. That's what a lot of these other, why there are so many alternative currencies.
Yeah.
What happened was, is that you have, where, are, see, from the beginning, you and I would know this. Where's the central plan? Where's the weak link? Where is, if that, well, they'd have to this and this and this. And I go, well, then that's what they'll do. But it'll be hard. What do you mean be hard? You mean like NSA, I got unlimited money hard like that? I mean, you know.
Yeah, really.
Right, here we go.
Yeah.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Mushroom cloud. You know, this is what we're, everybody, they want us to be concerned about. But, you know, my thing is damn, it's going conventional when everybody's got a nuclear weapon, you know, including North Korea. And they say, yeah, but we're going to build more aircraft carriers and we're going to build our own land out in the middle of the South China Sea. And we're going to. Oh, and you think your big Navy, bring it on. I got a bunch of hypersonic missiles that go, you know, 15 times the speed of sound or some, you know, ungodly crap like that. Boom! I don't even need to put a charge on it. Just an impact, like a meteor hitting your aircraft, and it's gone. So now it's, how do you think this is going to play out? So this brinkmanship, this going up to the brink and see who blinks, you know, I'm going, you know, tell me how this is going to play out with Russia and China and the Silk Road and the South China Sea and Korea and Middle East. Go, Karen.
Yeah, well, that's a hard thing to figure out. I mean, the way they're playing all the, but it's, again, I think states trying to assert their value, trying to communicate their value and their importance to populations that increasingly realize that they are nothing but burdens, that they're not important. They are stupid, costly, wasteful, and they don't add value. That's the real perception of most people of their governments.
So we need a war.
Well, I mean, this is always a failing government, whether it's a kingdom or an empire or rarely a republic. But if a republic emerges like ours into an empire of sorts, you know, as it fails, demands and claims of war are the final. This is the final stage of the government asserting its value. And if they can achieve a war, then they can postpone the inevitable collapse of the government, if they can get one. But the problem with nuclear wars is they can't really be fought, you know? We don't fight a nuclear war. A nuclear war is...
Survived.
I mean, it's you survive it. It's kind of random. It's very destructive, well beyond any type of state-state conflict. You know, that might, one state doesn't get along with another state, so we'll fight. Well, no, you're not going to fight with nuclear weapons. That's not how it works. So, you know, this scariness, I think this development of fear, and Trump is being Trump in part, but he's also doing what states do. You know, they try to justify how important they are to the world. And in the United States case, it tries to justify how important it is to the world, but also to the people that pay for it. And it's not working very well. People are changing. We recognize that we have great power and opportunity, and what states do, instead of helping us with that, they actually hinder our power, and they destroy our opportunity. They limit our opportunity. You know, it's on a local level, one of the things you're seeing very unpopular now, even amongst both major parties, is all this regulation and trade certification that the states and the U.S. government hands out. You know, FDA. 20 years ago, FDA wasn't under fire for holding back, medicines and not approving them unless it came with a big fat paycheck to somebody. Now it's common knowledge that the FDA stands in the way of medical breakthroughs. We know that. It's common knowledge. Now, that's a big change. That's a major change. So there's no aspect of the U.S. government and most state governments, there's no aspect there that really earns its keep, that people feel is valuable, that people feel is worth it. Mainly, they say, I'm living my life. I wish I could just ignore government, and I know I have to pay my taxes, so that's a burden, and I do that. But they don't feel like, hey, you know, and you could tell this if you said, okay, let's voluntarily do taxes. Taxes are voluntary. Pay for what you think you use. Of course it wouldn't work. It has to be by force. People don't feel they're getting their money's worth from any government level, whether it's local, state, or federal. So this is the environment that that government is dealing with. The states are dealing with this. The state organizations deal with this. And so what are they doing? Well, they're saying, well, how do we get people to really like us? You know, I really want you guys to like us and value us and need us. There's only one way, one reason we need the state. That's fundamental defense. That would be something that I think a majority, 95% of people would say, oh, yeah, that's a state function. Let's do defense. So what do? They feed on the fear. We are the only ones, the government, the only ones that can protect you. And, of course, increasingly that falls on deaf ears.
You know, I got to inject this, Karen. There was a listener out of Houston sent me a graphic. You know, every now and then he'll communicate and let me know when things are, you know, broke on the site or something. But he sent me this, and it's a picture of Benjamin Franklin, a portrait there. And above it, it says, we gave you liberty. And below it says, but you couldn't figure out how to pay for the roads without stealing from others. I mean, that just says it right there. We gave you liberty, but it's like you couldn't figure out how to build the roads without stealing, so then you screwed it up. Well, who will build the roads? See, they got to come up with something who'll fight the fires? You know, get grandma when she's falling and can't get up? Who will do? I mean, they pick this stuff and they build an entire government ideology around
the weird thing. The weird thing about that, and I would challenge that particular graphic, is that in the time of Benjamin Franklin, the government didn't build roads. Roads were built by people in communities and fees were charged. That's how roads got built.
No, that's the point. You know, he was saying, look, we were able to build roads without government having to do it.
That's the point. I get it. Yeah.
You know, we gave you liberty, but you couldn't figure out how to pay for the roads without stealing from others, so then you're screwed.
Yeah. And also, too, and I think psychology comes into this, and we underestimate the power of understanding how humans think and act. The founders kind of got this. They said, you got to have limited government, not because government itself is bad, but because human beings are terrible. And they will, they will take the path of least resistance. They will steal before they will work. You know, they will boss over people and achieve power and take in flattery. You know, they're very susceptible to all these things. You know, the seven deadly sins, that's human. Dogs don't have that. Cats don't have that. Humans have that. So they understood psychology far better than we do nowadays. You know, nowadays we think socialism is a system of government that will provide for all people. Underlying socialism is covetousness and laziness and graft and the idea that others owe you a living. These are psychological ideas. These are frameworks that human beings have. So socialism itself is a reflection of all the worst aspects of humanity. But it's sold as, oh, this is an equitable, wonderful system. Of course it's not. But it's actually a system that doesn't restrain the bad sides of how human beings are and behave.
I give you, we have a house guest that's here for, we have a gentleman named Morpheus, you know, when he went by, Thomas Costanza, that was arrested for doing Bitcoin trading. And we had a hearing yesterday in federal court.
Oh, wow.
And he's been in for almost a year, since 420, you know, it was on April 20th, they arrested him. You know, they were looking for drug haul, and there was no drugs. There was no guns. There was no nothing. No alcohol. No, just guy trading Bitcoin. And we got him. Well, they dismissed everything but money laundering. They kept, you know, piling up. Well, yesterday dismissed everything but money. We'll be talking about it in the next hour. But one of the gentlemen that's challenging the BIT license in New York City, when Ben Lasky did this Department of Financial Services in New York thing a few years ago, they've been challenging whether, you know, you have to have a license to do Bitcoin, so on. Well, of course, they're going to say you have to. But he's from New York and more left, you know, kind of a socialist mentality. Well, you know, as we talk about these very things, I'm going, you know, I can see where the overlap is. They do believe it can come down to, you know, localized and that kind of stuff. But here's the problem. When they're talking about anarchist, he's from France also. So French anarchist are, and I'm going, yeah, we're anarchist. Oh, yeah, well, we need, I go, no. I guarantee your definition of anarchist is different than ours. Because in ours, anarchy is not just against this government. It's against government. You know, this whole they rule me thing. Well, most anarchists are, the anarchists are socialist anarchists. No, they're against whatever government is there so they can be the government. You know?
That's right. Seeking power. Yep, which is very human. It's a very human failing to want to seek power over other people.
And I'm like, to do good, of course. You know, we'll do it right.
We'll be so much better. You can trust us.
Yeah, we're the good guys. we'll rule better. You know, I don't want to be rude. So we'll be talking about this in the next hour. Yeah, today's show is one you want to listen to, especially with Karen Katowski. We'll be right back in just a little bit.
From the second letter of Captain Mark. Any pirate knows that commerce is communication. Markets condense oceans of information into a single price. Innovations in communication are circumventing the scrutiny of the crown. This signals a change in the coin of the realm. The crown uses digital currency to surveil, censor, seize, and destroy wealth at will, so pirate currency must protect us from this weaponized money. We need to move funds further, faster, cheaper, and without third-party observation, basing decisions on an accelerating flow of information. So pirates require nearly instantaneous transactions with no arbitrary limits on volume or artificial influences on fees. Most importantly, a pirate currency must preclude centralization. Otherwise, it will become another link in our chain to the crown. A superior currency will result in the obsolescence of the coin of the realm and the extinction of the crown itself. Trade above the grid. Join us at piratswithoutborders.com.
Yeah, here's another thing. I'm getting emails into the year, and ammunition and everything is starting to go down finally, you know. So it's, they're selling bullets for like, we'll pay you to haul it off. Let me see.
Oh, wow. So overproduction, really, in some ways.
I think just, lack of fear. You know, it's what always is, you know, and then it kind of, they kept amping up and capping the whole last year of Trump, and kind of were maybe they're going to come. And now that they see he's done his year and he's not impeached yet or shot something, then all of a sudden the ammo starts going down.
that's interesting. Yeah. But you know, the cost of the price of gold, is gold suppressed too? Is it kind of stabilized and dropping, or I haven't even checked it?
Gold's been going up here last year.
Yeah, I think the real worry is the whole debt structure of the planet, but in particular, you know, for Americans. I mean,
you know, I'm trying to remember what it was. It had a big impact on me just a few days ago. I'd have to scroll. I don't even remember what it was. It was something like one of the big Wall Street banks has gotten out of something. It was, and it kind of shocked me. I went, whoa, you know, but I can't remember what it was. It was just supportive of this. They're a ban- it's kind of like, it was something, it made me think of when the Standard Oil, Rockefellers. Yeah, when the Rockefellers abandoned fossil fuels. I mean, I only want to say fossil hydrocarbons. When they started abandoning hydrocarbons and their trusts and so on, and the next generation kids are starting to invest in, I don't know, alternative something, you know. And it was something, it kind of gave me that feeling that the banks are starting to abandon what's going on now. They'll let somebody, okay, you guys take it. We're over here. We see, but we're going to support this other trend. And that's why, you know, our show is, I mean, the ship, the pirate ship is the Precariat. Did I tell you about that, why we named it the Precariat?
Oh, Oh, no, I don't think so.
Okay, if you go to piratesoutborders.com, it features the ship. It's a pirate ship. You know, it's a shipping ship. It's an airship, spaceship, ship. Okay, you got to have, pirates got to have a ship, all right?
Yeah.
So the ship is named the Precariat. Well, the Precariat, that came from a couple of years ago at Bilderberger when Luke Radowski, We Are Change, was there, and they have one of their agenda items. We have to deal with the Precariat and this populist uprising of Brexit and Trump. So this was a couple of summers ago. So I'm going, what the hell are they talking about? There was a United Kingdom guy named Guy Standing that wrote an economics book entitled The Precariat or something like that. And what he was talking about was all these young people come in with a degree, big giant student loan, no skills, no job, and been commercialized to wanted the next everything. So they live a precarious existence. So I go, the precariat. All right, here we go.
Very interesting.
Air and online, this is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, things are going to start getting funky. So you got to have some funky music. Getting all funky and stuff. Well, Karen Katowski, she's definitely been paying attention to the funk, you know. And I want to make sure that, you know, we're all of the guests that I have, a lot of times, you know, for, God, we've been on since 03. So this has been, how long is that? That's like 15 years. Damn.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Damn. And I remember us having you on, God, about then on Charles's show, maybe a year or two. So I've known you a while. So this is, so when it's the beginning of the year, you know, we'll have, you know, like Gerald and Karen on and the other people and so on, and a lot of the new guys, but it's, you know, where's the overlap? You know, where's it? And I think the overlap, yeah, certainly our philosophy and predictions of the future, and we've been pretty good, you know, in general, all of us. And I'm thinking it's going to be this decentralization of everything thing.
Yeah, it is, and it's a continuation of that. It's been happening. I mean, technology is leading the way for that. You know, technology recognizes the individual, loves the individual, empowers the individual. Governments are way behind that, and of course, governments never. They are actually the antipode of that. They're the opposite of the individual. Governments are about groups, and so you know this tension between where communication technology and manufacturing technologies and robotic technology, the capabilities of technology is really at a tension, a strong continuous tension with states. Because states don't value the individual. States need groups. They need armies. They need people all doing the same thing when they're told to do it. That's what states need.
Yeah,
states,
but what if you have
that.
Everybody as Marvin the Martian and they all got the button?
Yeah.
That's why Marvin got kicked out, man. He had the button.
Yeah.
Well, you know, real quick before we get, I don't want to miss the opportunity. I want to, you know, do a, you know, a Warshak test here. You know, I'm going to go, you know, give you a topic. Give me your 30 seconds on it. We'll go to the next
one. Okay, 30 seconds.
South China Sea, China building islands. What up?
That's going to continue. That's going to continue. China has the same problems we do. High debt, empire, a lot of people on the precariat, riding the great ship precariat in China. They have the same problem we do with people expecting a better life, holding the government accountable for it, and then not receiving it. China's doing that. You know, we see China as a big industrial military being, and yet the only parts of China that are really developed industrially, militarily, technologically, are the few eastern seaboard type of areas that they have. You know, a few provinces are really like that. The rest of it is backwards and rural. It is a lot of growth, a lot of demand. People are connected. They know life can be better. This is terrible for the Chinese government. So they're going to continue to expand. That's what empires do when they're under internal duress. That's my prediction for China. They're going to continue to expand.
So is there any, I guess it has to wait for another movement or another election or another something, or you're like Kokesh running for the disillusionment of America.
Well, I mean, with China, you know, China has all these phantom cities or what do you call them, ghost cities that they built with government money, borrowed government money, printed government money. They have huge imbalances in their economy. As those start to collapse, China will be forced to probably take care of internal problems. If it continues to expand, it will break up. This is what happens to the empires. And China actually could be ahead of us on that trend line, which is not good necessarily. I mean, wars could happen. But most likely you're going to see a contraction ultimately. But in the next year, next 10 years, next 5 years, certainly, I think China's going to continue to expand.
But what about the U.S.? Are we going to, you know, try and, because, you know, it's a penis measuring thing and we got to have more aircraft carriers and space stations of we're going to kick your ass and chest out and Trump? I mean, are we going to come back?
I think our contraction has already started, and it in part started with Trump. I mean, yeah, he's got soldiers in Yemen. He didn't really leave Syria, but this is because he can't control his military. I think the contraction has begun. Our geographic imperial type contraction has begun, and I think part of it, and not to give Trump too much credit, but there's a whole lot of people in this country who saw in Trump something that is true, and that is, he likes to say, what is this worse, what is this worse, and if it's not worse, he takes a business approach to governing. You know, whether that's going to work or not, I don't know. But his attitude is that if it's not paying dividends, we're not going to do it.
Okay. This is a good one here. When he gave his generals, I just give him, you want to go, peace out, man. You're going to chart, go kick ass and not my problem. So then they start doing whatever the hell they're doing in Syria and certainly what's going on in Afghanistan. Is he giving them the rope to hang themselves?
He already gave them the rope to hang themselves. And I think we're going to see increasingly reduction of budgets to those activities. I can't imagine that Trump, like most Americans, thinks it's really smart to have a big, massive DOD budget, a Pentagon budget of $700 billion a year, and then every single war that they're operating, they ask for more money for that. You know, their budget is operating budget. Then they have extra budgets for wars. That's not a good business practice, and I don't think Trump is going to like that. I think he's going to say, look, I supported your budget of $700 billion. Make it work. If you can't make it work, you need to make some hard decisions.
Yeah.
I think he'll stay.
All right, so we got China. Now, Russia, what's their role?
I think Russia is growing. I actually think Russia is doing what normal countries do. It's trying to do better for itself. It's trying to pay off, it doesn't have that many debts. It's trying to be productive. It's trying to match the expectations of the people with the demands of its government. I mean, I think they are, I don't see them as imperial in any way, certainly not like they were under communism. I don't see them nearly as imperial as we are. And if you look at the location of American positions and American allied, you know, military positions, they are behaving much as any other country would if it had enemies surrounding it.
Okay, North Korea, we're running out of time. North Korea.
I think North Korea is going to, I think the military is going to take over and then it's going to change. It's going to collapse. I think when you see...
Yeah, but he must smell something. He wants to be nice at the Olympics and starts talking to South Korea and pissing off Trump. What's that about?
They'll be fine, because the key to North Korea is going to be South Korea. It's going to be South Korea and China. That's what's going to happen. And I think those guys, I mean, China got really upset when Trump was angry that they weren't, you know, remember he called China, he said, this can't continue, you can't keep giving oil to the North Koreans and smuggling this and that. And I mean, I think China, at the point in time when China and South Korea both see North Korea as more of a burden than a value-added negotiating point, which is what it is. I mean, North Korea exists for no other reason than to help China and to help South Korea justify troops and help China justify what it's doing. So when that ends, when its usefulness to those entities ends, it will go away. Now, can we do something about that? Maybe. But it would take a sophisticated worldview, which I don't think we have in our country, because we find an armed nuclear threat of North Korea very useful to our own government.
Yeah. So it's got to have enemies.
But when its usefulness ends, it will collapse. It is not self-sustaining in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, Iran.
You know, we got to pray for Iran. I mean, there's another country like Russia, surrounded by people that swear they want to destroy it. I mean, seriously, Israel and Iran used to be allies years and years and years ago. They had some friends. There was a great Jewish population in Iran. Much of that has changed now. But Iran is much like Israel portrays itself, you know, surrounded by enemies. But the difference is the culture of Persia is very ancient, and its economy is very, very diversified. And it should be more diversified. But, I mean, it can stand on its own.
Well, these protests that are going on, I haven't scratched the surface on that, really, other than to know whenever they do that, they get hijacked by some foreign intelligence, and they say that it's about this and because we say. So
you can't believe anything the American government says about those protests. So I don't know much about that because I've only looked right so far at the American reporting of it. And initially they said, oh, it's a great uprising. So then I thought the CIA might be involved. But I don't think we have a very good presence in Iran. And I think Israel's presence in Iran has been reduced. I mean, they killed too many scientists. Israel went in there and kind of broke some of the rules. So I don't think they're as effective inside Iran as they might have been. So I think the West is making a little bit more, or at least the governments of the West are making more of these protests than should be made. We got to watch that and wish them well.
Okay, so Middle East in general, what do you think? You know, flare up. What about
Syria? Collapsing. It's collapsing. Just look at what the House of Saud has been busily doing for the last 6 to 8 months. You know, what are they doing? The most important thing they're doing isn't torturing and killing fellow rich people. It's taking their money and putting it into the House of Saud's bank account. I mean, they are extracting. They are basically cleaning house and hightailing it out of there.
They're ready to hit the road?
Well, they're certainly consolidating assets into the hands of fewer and fewer members of the actual House of Saud, which is already a great minority in that country. A powerful, tiny minority. Granted power by
Karen Katowski. We'll have her on again soon. Because, I mean, you know, she's right. Here it comes. Get ready.
Why did you move to...
There we go. Thanks, Karen. Yeah, I know, man. You're right up to the freaking... Oh, that's good. I get to go to the bathroom and just let Karen talk. You know who that is? Let me tell you, of all the people, they go, Ernie, you always talk too much. You know, I go, oh, yeah? Well, there's no dead air on my show. And I'll tell you who it
that's
is.
That's right.
It's like Kokesh, of course. He'll ramble on forever. Then you have Charles Goyette. Lou Rockwell. Gerald Celente. You. let's see, Mark Victor, definitely. And Jeff Berwick is, you know, kind of a good conversationalist. But I mean, there's only probably, I can count on both hands, the people that I can just turn on and then I get to go to the bathroom, you know, and I can come back.
Right, 'cause they'll just keep on talking.
Just keep on going, you know, so those are my favorite. What I want to make sure is we don't miss your perspective on a lot of stuff. How often do you think, you know, we're welcome to contact you?
Oh, I mean, I could come on every other week. I'm sorry I missed the Wednesday. I totally forgot about it, but it's because I'm out of practice and out
yeah,
of
Yeah, no, I, that's fine. We'll survive.
But no, I could do my schedule is such that I could definitely
Is there a special day that's better for you?
Friday works. If it's or Thursday, as long as it's the same day, then I'll get in the good habit and I'll be able to put on my calendar.
And what time? Well, we have Friday's a good day. And it's 9 to noon Eastern. So what would be the better hour for you?
Well, Friday at 10 works, just like we did today. I think that works good.
Okay.
And so, 10 my time.
So that would be our second hour. Donna, put on the schedule to have Karen just a pinger every other week to be on Friday, the second hour. And if she can, she can, she can, she can't. But we'll try and do that, make it a regular thing if we can, because things are going to be happening fast.
They really are. And, you know, this anti-Trump book by Bannon, this is very interesting.
Oh, Bannon wrote that?
Well, he was the provider of the information, Wolf or whatever his name is, guy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's Bannon's. It's basically Bannon's book, and it's based on mostly Bannon's information. Yeah, so Bannon turncoated, his whole thing and going to make some money off of it. But it really... the Russia linkage has been beat to death, and there was never any. There was no Russian influence. I mean, if any, it was on the Democrat side. But they're still after Trump. They're still looking, and I think this is all part of. You know, Trump's actually making traction on things that are very frightening to both parties. he's actually trying to do what he said, and what he said was what average people who don't like the government. And Trump himself has admitted he doesn't like the government.
No, it's been really simple that he knows how to read rating charts, preference, focus groups, kind of with the people he knew, the people going to be on the side of this, and guess what? I get to control the 24, 48, 72, 100-hour news cycle because I got
That's right. He enjoys that. He feeds off of that. I mean, you know, what business person goes to Hollywood to do a show? This is a person that really enjoys this kind of, I would say, public manipulation to some extent. But, you know, this give and take, this feedback, this riding the wave, I mean, this is his environment. He enjoys it. It's like surfing, and he's doing it. And they can't deal with that because there are some real risks to the status quo of what Trump is doing. Now, you know what and we didn't talk about this, but maybe another time, but I'm thinking that Trump wants to get rid of Sessions, and he can't do it, so he let Sessions go ahead and do this marijuana thing.
Yeah, no, I'm like, give him rope, man, go.
Are unhappy. The people and the banks, and the Democrats, the liberals, who are pro-marijuana, which I'm pro-marijuana myself, but I mean, you know, let's just say there's a liberal section that really likes marijuana. Free market side likes it. Banks are investing and looking for new opportunity. They don't want that to put at risk. All of these people, some of which are his enemies, are all now going to be saying, you've got to reverse this decision that Sessions made. Fire him. And once they fire Sessions,
Mueller did Sessions do that? What was behind that? Well, I don't understand.
Well, I think the government wants money.
Money what? From where? What are you talking about?
From the state. I mean, they want to go after people dealing with marijuana. You know, they reversed the Cole memorandum.
No. I understand what they did.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering the motivation. I don't see the political,
I think the money.
I don't understand.
Well, Sessions is a drug warrior.
But why? Is it as simple as Big Pharma came in? It was Pfizer said, thou shalt now as AG, you go do it or something?
I don't know if that was it as much as just,
he's just stupid.
I think there's a siege mentality going on inside of D.C. They see that Trump will attack them, destroy them, not fund them, not give them hiring capability, embarrass them, tweet about their agency in a negative way. They feel under siege, and it's just like governments in general. They have to assert how valuable they are, how useful they are, how powerful they are. So I see it as almost a knee-jerk reaction, which is a huge mistake, and I think Trump let it happen. I don't think Trump wanted it to happen. He's been pro-marijuana. He has actually been very much pro-state rights. So I think he let Sessions do this in order to get rid of Sessions.
Yeah, I don't think Sessions understands the retirement community. We don't live too far from Sun City West up here.
Mm-hmm.
They are abandoning opioids like you wouldn't freaking believe. 300 people because in church basements getting marijuana and how to make it themselves with their
little buttermilk
and whatever.
That's right, because cannabis is a natural healing tool. I mean, it's good for the body. The cannabinoids, not the high part. No, not the THC necessarily. But, yeah, cannabinoids are huge. And certainly the pharmaceuticals want in on it. But they've already got the patents. They've already got, I don't think this was driven by pharmaceuticals, in my opinion. I think Sessions is not too bright. He wants to assert himself. I think Trump is giving him rope to hang himself. And I think Sessions will not be long for his position. I think they've wanted to get, you know, and I kind of trust Rand Paul's instincts. Remember Rand Paul was the only one that voted against Sessions? He said he's terrible, of the Republicans.
He said Sessions
is not the guy you want to have. He has not got the right ideas. Couldn't believe that he was nominated. I think Rand's instincts are correct, and I think
Trump put him in there as a reward for coming out early and supporting. He definitely does his thing.
There you go, and he has to get rid of him. He needs to get rid of him.
Yeah,
he's not long for this world. Trump needs to fire him, and I think this will be the platform. And it won't be Trump firing him. It will be the Democrat senators in these states that are being impacted by this, and the bankers that are calling those senators being impacted by this. They're going to demand that he be fired, and Trump's going to say, "Well, reluctantly, I'm going to have to let this guy go." That's what I think. And then we'll go back to the Cole memorandum. Won't be a Cole memorandum. It'll be something Congress actually enacts. And once that happens, the floodgates will be open for this.
Yeah, that's one thing. You know, what Sessions going to do if, Congress just passes a law? Then
that's
what?
Right. We won't be able to do anything. And this could be, I don't expect Congress to act because I don't think they're very effective at that, but certainly they might try to. And really, a lot of these big states that are impacted by this they have strong Democratic senators. And they have a very much Republican senators on board with them. So the Senate can certainly
But we got to go. I got 10 large. Seconds. I got to get back. So we're going to do this soon again. Donna will set it up. Thanks, Karen.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it'll be good. I'll look forward to Friday mornings, and I think I can certainly make it work. I have the time for it.
All right, cool.
And, yeah, it'll be great.
Bye, Karen.
Okay.